Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. For the announcements this morning, today's service is being brought to you by the Worship Arts Group. And for one of the announcements, we have, as we continue to focus on making a difference in the area of economic inequality, LCUUC is hosting a program here next Saturday morning, February 18th, on taking a new look at poverty. This program helps people see poverty through a new lens and gain greater understanding of the struggle to live without resources. Please read more about it in the order of service, look for information in the social hall, and sign up to attend. Join us in our work for economic justice. Today's order of service includes announcements of other upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. To stay current on services, events, and activities, check out our webpage at lcuuc.org and like and follow us on Facebook. Please take a moment at this point to silence all your electronic devices that you may have with you here today as we begin our service. Thank you.
In 1967, the Beatles released the non-album single, All You Need Is Love. It seemed simple and straightforward. When asked in 1971 whether songs like Give Peace a Chance and Power to the People were propaganda songs, John Lennon answered, sure, so was All You Need Is Love. I'm a revolutionary artist. My art is dedicated to change. It is more than likely that all of us at this point in history have been raised on pop music, Hallmark, and other venues, which through their constant use of the word love, have over time drained it of any depth of meaning. Love seems to help sell products, to be tied to a winged cupid and teenage infatuation, to be tied to just being happy. We forget its complexity, its revolutionary nature. We forget how tough it can be to maintain love. In February of 1992, the band U2 released their third single from their album, Achtung Baby. The song is called One, and it has stuck with me. Some have said that the song is about the reunification of Germany, where it was recorded, or about a marriage falling apart, or the conversation between an AIDS victim and his father. It can be all of those things, as at its heart, it is about relationships and the love required to build and maintain them, whether they are political or personal. So listen to the words. Is it getting better? Do you feel the same? Will it make it easier on you now? You got someone to blame. You say, one love, one life, when it's one need in the night. One love, we get to share it, leaves you, baby, if you don't care for it. Did I disappoint you or leave a bad taste in your mouth? You act like you never had love and you want me to go without. Well, it's too late tonight to drag the past out into the light. We're one, but we're not the same. We get to carry each other, one. Have you come here for forgiveness? Have you come to raise the dead? Have you come here to play Jesus to the lepers in your head? Did I ask too much? More than a lot. You gave me nothing. Now it's all I got. We're one, but we're not the same. Well, we hurt each other, then we do it again. You say, love is a temple. Love is a higher law. Love is a temple. Love the higher law. You ask me to enter, but then you make me crawl. And I can't be holding on to what you got when all you got is hurt. One love, one blood, one life. You got to do what you should. One life with each other. Sisters, brothers, one life, but we're not the same. We get to carry each other. Carry each other. Come, let us worship together. Please take a moment to greet those around you.
Sully, can you come forward? In the bleak and cold winter, we gather ourselves in to light the fire, to warm our spirits, to kindle the flame of love and hope. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, Come Sing a Song with Me, number 346 in the Gray Hymnal.
Thank you.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we work to bring a message of hope and grace to an imperfect world. My name is Lois Romikas, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. No matter who you are or where you have come from, you are welcome here. We welcome those who have some of the answers and those who have none of the answers and those who aren't sure they're asking the right questions at all. As a UUA-recognized welcoming congregation, we welcome and affirm all people, regardless of who they love and what pronouns they use. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service, and while you're there, find out more about our church. We are glad that you have chosen to be here today to celebrate and to worship with us.
One of the ways that we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have any food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service. There's a basket right up here. Or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story with Claire.
Everybody. This is one of my favorite books from childhood, and I'm happy to share it with all of you today. It's called A Book of Hugs. Before we begin, in the back of the book, there's some facts and hints about hugs. There is no such thing as a bad hug. There are only good hugs and great hugs. Hug someone at least once a day and twice on a rainy day. Hug with a smile, closed eyes are optional. A snuggle is a longish hug. Bedtime hugs help chase away bad dreams. And never hug tomorrow someone you could hug today. There are three kinds of bear hugs. Bear hugs are very strong. Be careful not to hurt. An octopus hug uses the whole body. Porcupine hugs are done very carefully. Puppy hugs are very soft and wet. Fraidy cat hugs make you feel safe. Piggyback hugs, also called riding piggyback, a good way to travel or see a parade. There are mommy hugs. You can never hug a mommy too much. Daddy hugs. Daddy hugs are best when he first walks in the door. There are grandpa hugs. Grandpa hugs are sometimes given while sitting. And grandma hugs. Grandma hugs can be found anywhere, but especially nice in the kitchen. A brother hug, usually called a buddy hug. A circle of buddy huggers is called a huddle. A sister hug, also known as a single arm hug. Single arm hugs are good for people who walk together, even if they aren't sisters. Baby hugs are given with a little tickle. Sometimes you might get wet. A Great Aunt Mary hug can be given by any large lady you see maybe once a year. You will usually end up with lipstick on your cheeks. Arm hugs are good for people who are too big for you to get your arms around. Hand hugs, usually called handshakes. Never hand hug with dirty hands unless the other person has dirty hands too. Knee hugs, also called tall person hugs. Knee hugs are for tall people. Warning, never try to knee hug a moving person. Thing hugs, a blanket hug. Everyone needs some kind of a blanket. Tree hugs. Some trees are easier to hug than others. Note, if you hug a pine tree, you might get stuck on it. Rock hugs. Rock hugs are very hard on your face. Pricker bush hugs. Never hug a pricker bush, or poison ivy, or a cactus. An ice cube hug. Ice cube hugs are quite common in February, although not today. Lamppost hug. A lamppost hug can save you from a painful experience. A sandwich hug. The whole family can get into a sandwich hug. Special hugs. Birthday hugs. A birthday hug is a present anyone can afford. Report card hugs. A hug, B hug, even a C hug. Hurt hugs. Hurt hugs make the pain go away. Winner hugs, loser hugs. And that is my story. Have you hugged anybody today yet? I give you a chance to try. Thank you.
Please help join in singing the children to their classrooms. The song is called, For You Shall Go Out and Enjoy. I think that's always the hardest part of the service. Before the digital age, passing the offering plate was how everyone gave to their church community. It was the church bill which we had to pay to fulfill our pledge of financial support. Nowadays, we may have relegated that to automatic payment. But passing the plate has never been about a bill or just a practical exercise in order to keep the lights on. It is a ritual about meeting our obligations to ourselves and to the communities to which we belong and are committed, of showing our love in generosity. The practice of giving, as it becomes second nature and first response, helps bring forth the realm of love. The morning offering will now be given and received. Thank you for these gifts given and received for the work of this community. One of the reasons that we come together in community here is to share our laughter and our tears. And we do this in several ways. Before the service, you are always welcome to silently light a candle on the candle table. And during the service, we speak aloud those joys or concerns. And the worship associate lights candles for us. So would anyone who has a joy or concern please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone? And please limit yourself to a few sentences so that everyone who would like to can speak.
Good morning, this is Jim. If you would light two candles of concern for two friends in Oconomowoc who both lost their son to an overdose in the past week.
This is Heidi. I have a joy. I'm very thankful for my family and just helping out with each other and being there for each other.
This is Andrea. I have a great joy. Back in November, my father was able to connect for the first time with his birth family over Facebook. And a couple weeks ago, we were all able to meet for the first time. And we were nervous about it, but it felt like we were just having a family reunion. I now have two more aunts, two more uncles, and cousins all over the world.
Hi, this is Christy. I'd like to light a candle of concern. We'll finish my radiation treatments this week. I'm really not sure how I'm going to make it through the next 3 days, but they tell me I will. I'm not sure where I go now from here. I've been battling cancer for almost a year, and come Thursday, I'll have a new primary purpose in life, I guess. But I'd also like to light a candle of joy for this church, for all of the support that you have given my family over the last 10 months. And really, in particular, Helen, I don't know where you are, but I don't know how I would have made it through the last 6 weeks without your help. So, Helen, thank you so much from my family.
And we light the last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which we have not named here today.
Please stay seated and join in singing hymn number 1009 in the teal hymnal, Meditation on Breathing. We will begin with breathe in and breathe out. And you can either stay with that or if you'd like, join in the other parts as they come in. Doug will lead us.
Emily Pearl Kingsley wrote, "I am often asked to describe the experience of raising a child with a disability. To try to help people who have not shared this unique experience to understand it, to imagine how it would feel. It's something like this. When you're going to have a baby, it's like planning a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and make your wonderful plans. The Colosseum, the Michelangelo David, the gondolas of Venice. You may learn some handy phrases in Italian. It's all very exciting. After months of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. You pack your bags and off you go. Several hours later, the plane lands. The stewardess comes and says, 'Welcome to Holland.' 'Holland?' you say. 'What do you mean, Holland? I signed up for Italy. I'm supposed to go to Italy. All my life, I've dreamed of going to Italy. But there's been a change in the flight plan. They've landed in Holland, and there you must stay. The important thing is they haven't taken you to a horrible, disgusting, filthy place full of pestilence, famine, or disease. It's just a different place. So you must go out and buy new guidebooks, and you must learn a whole new language, and you will meet a whole new group of people you would never have met. It's just a different place. It's slower paced than Italy, less flashy than Italy. But after you've been there for a while and you catch your breath, you look around, and you begin to notice that Holland has windmills and tulips. Holland even has Rembrandts. But everyone you know is busy coming and going from Italy, and they're all bragging about what a wonderful time they're having there. And for the rest of your life, you will say, 'Yes, that's where I was supposed to go. That's what I had planned.' And the pain of that will never, ever go away, because the loss of that dream is a very significant loss. But if you spend the rest of your life mourning the fact that you didn't get to Italy, you may never be free to enjoy the very special, very lovely things about Holland." Here ends the first reading.
Please join me in a moment of silence or the spirit of prayer.
Oh, friends, I went to my closet this morning and thought, gosh, what does one wear to stand up and tell a group of people who you admire and respect that you feel like you failed at the single most important role you've ever had to play in your life? Well, here it is, and regardless of my clothing, I stand before you exposed and vulnerable. My story is raw, but it's important, I think. And I hope you'll receive it with forgiveness and acceptance. I once dreamed of talking about boys and shopping for prom dresses and celebrating college acceptance letters with my oldest daughter. I was a young mom, and I believed that meant we would automatically be close. I wouldn't be a lame older parent who couldn't understand my daughter's generation. I'd be cool. She'd be able to come to me with anything, and we'd drink coffee and figure life out together. You know, a lot like the Gilmore Girls. But as Jocelyn approached her middle school years, it became apparent reality would not unfold like I had been seeing it in my mind's eye. We were a mother and a daughter who just were cut from different cloths. If I thought we were going left, she went right. When I said no, she invariably said yes. I was conscientious and insecure. She was a free spirit, creative and chaotic. I needed to feel in control, and she was fiercely independent. We were in Holland. I boarded a plane for Italy, but I ended up in Holland. The story is hard to tell, and it may be difficult to hear. So before I go on, let me say this. Today, I love Holland, as does Jossie. Much like the author in our reading this morning, we have come to appreciate all of the unique beauty of Holland. I truly believe the world needs Jossie just as she is, just the way her life experiences have shaped her. And I look at her with awe and wonder, and I'm anxious to see the rest of her story unfold. When she was 13, though, she was diagnosed with ADHD. I worked with school counselors to try to support her success, but had little impact. It seemed like everything I felt was important, she shunned. She skipped classes and couldn't care less about her grades. She began to abstain from personal hygiene practices, wore dirty, ill-fitting clothes, and dyed and cut her hair in awkward styles that she knew just made my skin crawl. She lied. She stole. She was diagnosed with depression. Then she attempted suicide. Bipolar disorder was added to her diagnosis. We tried medications. We went to therapy. But there were few signs of getting through to her. She was shameless and unapologetic, and she made me feel uncomfortable and insecure. The beautiful little girl that I once sang, "You are my sunshine," to brought clouds of sadness and despair to my days. I hated who she was being. I hated how she made me feel, how she made me look in front of family and colleagues and friends. I hated that instead of hanging out at Altera talking about getting her driver's license or what she and her friends were doing that weekend, we were in and out of emergency rooms and psychiatrists' offices. I wanted to love her. But for me at the time, to be able to love her, I needed to be able to relate to her, to understand her, to feel like she was an extension of me. To love her, I needed her to go through life as I had imagined. She didn't, and I couldn't. I reeled from the pain and guilt that this tumultuous mother-daughter relationship caused. That mothers and daughters automatically love each other was such a universal truth for me that it called everything that I thought was real in life to question. I felt like a failure. The vicious cycle continued. She was using street drugs, abusing prescription drugs, and she had developed an eating disorder. She repeatedly ran away from home, sometimes going missing for weeks. I feared for her life. When she was 16, I made the excruciatingly difficult decision to admit her to a residential treatment facility where she stayed for 2 years. I had a long mental list of ways that Jossie should be different, ways that she could improve who she was. A list of shoulds and shouldn'ts that she needed to work on while she was away. Things that I couldn't do for her or make her do my way. Lord knows I would have if I could have. I didn't know it then, but that was my ego. The list maker. the incessant reel of shoulds and shouldn'ts that clouded my thinking. In all the years that I tried to parent my struggling daughter, I mistook my ego for a moral compass of sorts. I really did. Do this, don't do that. I can't believe you just. Why in the world would she? Can you believe her? You're not going to take that, are you? I listened to my ego, its demands and its judgments, and I thought something was wrong with everyone else, especially Jossie. While I thought Jossie's time and treatment was for her to get better, I slowly began to realize that I needed to do as much changing as she did. I learned that my ego was not a moral compass, but a pain-in-the-ass control freak who wreaked havoc on the relationships that were important to me, in particular, my relationship with my daughter. I spent most of Jossie's life apologizing for her. I was afraid people found her too loud, too forward, too open. Apologize, scold, correct. It was a pattern that at the time I believed was what parenting was. It was what we were supposed to do, wasn't it? To teach our kids to become acceptable, presentable adults. I see moms do it all the time. Exasperated moms apologizing for their actions, their child's actions, and then shushing the child, and usually adding a threat and an attempt to coax better behavior. Jossie had a strong sense of self, and instead of embracing my input on how she should act, she continually did things her own way. And instead of recognizing her strengths and having the patience with her weaknesses and giving her the space she needed to be who she was, I became more controlling. Oh, she fought me. She tried in so many ways to stand up for herself, to prove herself worthy of my love and acceptance without giving up on who she truly was. She felt no allegiance to my ego whatsoever. I took her attempts at self-preservation as personal attacks. I accused her of being disrespectful and ungrateful. Oh, how we argued and fought. To this day, it chills me to think of it. I struggled with loving Jossie, not because she was bad or not good enough, but because I was tuning into my ego when it needed to be quieted and discredited. My ego drowned out my ability to understand her or empathize with her. Eckhart Tolle has said, "The primary cause of unhappiness is never the situation, but your thoughts about it. Be aware of the thoughts you are thinking. Separate them from the situation, which is always neutral. It is as it is." When I stopped blaming Jossie for my dissatisfaction about things she was doing or not doing, our relationship shifted. I was able to really see her and appreciate her for who she was when I stopped focusing on who I thought she should be. When I was able to express trust and pride in Jossie, she was more confident, more invested in doing things well. And when I let go of my expectations, Jossie opened up to me. She more readily considered my thoughts and feelings without needing to immediately dismiss them in an effort to stand up for herself. This isn't to say that Jossie was cured of her mental illness, or that we have gone on living a conflict-free fantasy. We both need to set boundaries about what we can and cannot accept from one another. But today we do this without judgment, without anger. We value our relationship more than we value being right, much to the dismay of our egos. There was a time when I thought I would lose my daughter. It was a devastating experience to find it so difficult to love my little girl. There's so much that we lost, that I feel responsible for, that I wish I could give back to her. But Tolle's words stay with me. It is as it is. And I realize that all of Jossie's experiences add up to make her the insightful, sensitive, charismatic person that she is today. Thank you.
Ice cream castles in the air and feather canyons everywhere. I've looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and snow on everyone. So many things I would have done. The clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from and still somehow it's clouds' illusions that I recall. I really don't know clouds. At all. Junes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way that you feel as every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, now it's just another show. You leave them laughing when you go. And if you care, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. Now, from give and take, and still somehow, it's love's illusions that I recall. I really don't know love at all. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say to someone, I love you, right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds. I've looked at life that way. Now my old friends, they're acting strange. They shake their heads and they tell me that I've changed. Yes, I have. But something's lost and something's gained in living every day. From win and lose, and still somehow, it's life's illusions that I recall. I really don't know life or love or clouds at
all. I still have goosebumps from that song. That was wonderful. When love beckons you, follow him, though his ways are hard and steep. And when his wings enfold you, yield to him, though the sword hidden among his pinions may wound you. And when he speaks to you, believe in him, though his voice may shatter your dreams, as the north wind lays waste in the garden. For even as love crowns you, shall he crucify you. Even as he is for your growth, so is he for your pruning. Like sheaves of corn, he gathers you unto himself. He threshes you to make you naked. He sifts you to free you from your husks. He grinds you to whiteness. He kneads you until you are pliant. And then he assigns you to his sacred fire that you may become sacred bread for God's sacred feast. All these things shall love do unto you, that you may know the secrets of your heart, and in that knowledge become a fragment of life's heart. But if in your fear you would seek only love's peace and love's pleasure, then it is better for you that you cover your nakedness and pass out of love's threshing floor into the seasonless world where you shall laugh, but not all your laughter, and weep, but not all of your tears. Love gives not but itself and takes not from itself. Love possesses not, nor would it be possessed. For love is sufficient on to love. When you love, you should not say, God is in my heart, but rather, I am in the heart of God. And think not you can direct the course of love, for love, if it finds you worthy, directs your course. Love has no other desire but to fulfill itself. But if you love and must needs have desires, let these be your desires: to melt and be like a running brook that sings its melody into the night, to know the pain of too much tenderness, to be wounded by your own understanding of love, and then to bleed willingly and joyfully, to wake at dawn with a winged heart and give thanks for another day of loving, to rest at noon hour and meditate on love's ecstasy, to return home at eventide with gratitude, and then to sleep with a prayer for the beloved in your heart and a song of praise on your lips. Herein ends the second reading. So some of you may know that I spent this past year doing a clinical pastoral education internship at Meritor Hospital in Madison. After battling back from my climbing accident and all the surgeries and feeling the need to prove how resilient and strong I was, I felt a strong desire to return deeper into the tender experience of suffering, this time alongside others. Understanding the potential isolation folks are apt to feel when the world continues on as usual, companioning patients and families through illness tragedy and death and loss has felt like an auger into my being. The exquisiteness of this tender, fragile journey has been and continues to be a window into the embodiment of the human condition in its truest sense. And I've witnessed many kinds of love. Often, though, this happens through retrospective reflection, as quote-unquote love doesn't always look like what I was accustomed to thinking love looked like. Of course, CPE has not been without its fallout. One particularly difficult Thursday, after dealing with two deaths, one a young man at the age of 42 coming into the ER with complications of a heroin overdose, and a beloved mother of four adult children in the ICU. I returned home feeling grateful for my mostly loving husband and children. That evening, I awoke at 3 a.m. to glance over at my peacefully sleeping Scott, hands clasped across his abdomen in true funeral style, utterly certain that his chest was not raising and lowering. I leaned in closer and confirmed, no movement, gasp. Feeling surely that he had suffered a silent cardiac arrest, I nudged him in the ribcage. Huh? What? What? He uttered, shaking his head and looking at me. Oh, good, I replied. I was scared because it looked like you weren't breathing. Ha! So you thought I was dead, he responded. Aw, that's cute. Feeling grateful and relieved in that moment, I laid my head on his chest, which was now raising and lowering, and I fell back to sleep. The truth is, doing this work has made me painfully aware of our impermanence. Most of the time, we just go on living our lives as we should, engaging with one another in meaningful, purposeful, and creative ways which are enriching to the world and the communities we live in. Sometimes, out of fear, we sabotage these interactions or the potential for deep connection. Why not? The pain of rejection and abandonment is scary, and we intuitively know too well that life is full of risk and decisions which impact how our lives unfold. Okay, opening up oneself to accept love is risky. On the other side of love is loss. We shudder to think of losing those we love, and for me it's the number one fear on my fear list. But what is the alternative to loving? One of the gifts of adopting children with histories of abandonment and trauma is the ability to learn in a deeper way about all of those theories that I learned about in graduate school. Those regarding a child's first 2 years and the attachment that happens to caregivers and parental figures during these times. My daughter Jade had a best friend, and we're told that she and Ifen would hold hands through the bars of their cribs as they fell asleep at night. We have pictures of her too. We knew these two were close because when we brought Jade home, she would often look for her in closets and call for her. Believe it or not, it was really cute and heartbreaking. We'll be visiting Ifen, now named Emma, this summer in Maine. On the other hand, we have numerous reasons to strongly believe that our son Kai was kept isolated and alone. When he came to us in the early days, he avoided eye contact and human touch. And he showed behaviors which were either superficially charming on one hand or kind of repulsive on the other. These were skills that he learned to keep himself safe. As his only experience with caregivers up until this time was met with pain of isolation and abandonment and feeling alone. Yes, this is trauma. And the implications can be lifelong. But I've taken away so much from the experience of trying to love a child who at their core really wants to push you away. To live is to risk. I think that we all have a little bit of Kai inside of ourselves, where our fears of not being good enough, smart enough, or acceptable can become paralyzing. It is tempting to hide behind our title or our role or our spouse or our image or our whatever it is, fill in the blank. Somehow, I think living into our potential got skewed into thinking about success or career goals, when I really believe that this potential is achieved when we truly embrace all that we are without fear and are able to be with one another in our real genuineness. Very often, love doesn't look like love at all. It can even appear quite the opposite. Someone who comes to mind is a mother whose daughter died of complications of alcoholism recently. On the surface, she seemed really hard and detached, kind of an unlikable character. When talking with her mother in great deal, she simply said, "It has been like a slow death, really. Mary just wasn't herself anymore. The years of alcoholism eroded her soul and our family. It feels like I've been grieving all along." We tend to forget the ripple effect emotional, physical, and spiritual trauma can have on systems and families, and that what may appear as coldness may be a learned, appropriate, and healthy boundary where loving means setting limits, and we have no guarantee of any outcome. And last, to truly love is to abide with loss. This may mean loss of a certain vision or dream or belief. It might be learning that your brother is gay and you never thought of him that way growing up, but suddenly you experience an existential rightness when embracing him for who he is. The loss might be giving up your career to spend more time with your family or taking more time away because you know yourself well enough that it helps you keep your sanity. Aging parents, acquiring disability, abandoning a treasured belief system which once worked well for us. The list of losses is endless, but one thing is certain. There is always a good degree of heart-wrenching involved. Love and loss always seem to go hand in hand. People often ask the question, isn't it hard to do a hospital chaplaincy with all of the sickness, loss, and death? My answer is always a resounding no. In fact, it's just the opposite. Looking loss in the face regularly helps me to really appreciate who is in my life in a way that I hadn't before. Knowing that nothing is permanent helps drive home the gratitude to live each day, each moment more fully. Living in a world that is unpredictable, with a body that is unpredictable, and a future that is unpredictable, is part of the human condition. But we have a choice to remain open to all of the seasons of our lives. May we be blessed to know the pain of too much tenderness, to be wounded by our own faulty understandings of love, and to be guided by the deep wellspring of trust, which comes from embracing the ebb and flow of life much more fully. May we be strong enough to accept love and bold enough to give it freely, without hesitation and without fear.
Thank you. We have some time for a polylog. And I'm going to ask a question. So polylogs are always hard because you are digesting what you've just heard and so on. But I'm going to ask the question, have you ever had a hard time loving someone? And how have you coped or worked through it? So I want you to think about that. If you're willing or able to share anything, the ushers will be bringing around microphones and you can share that. Or you know, if you want to throw something out there because you hate silence, you can say what your plans are for Valentine's Day.
Hi, this is Rick. When my older son was in eighth grade, he ran away. And like any parent, I was just distraught, what's going to happen? And the truth was, he's really a pretty good kid. He just outgrew his little small school, and he needed to move on. But finally, when he came wandering home a day later, I hugged him and told him that I'm going to trust you from now on. I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to trust you. He was 13. He's now 42, and we work together, love each other.
Hi, this is Carol. I have a sister that never did things the normal way, and she lives below the poverty line. I don't know how she makes it on a day-to-day basis, and it was always hard to accept her that way. Not meaning to put a plug in for the program here next week, Saturday. I attended it several years ago at a different church, and it helped me understand how people think differently when they're impoverished and why they make decisions they do. And that has actually helped me accept her the way she is.
Thank you. I'm going to shamelessly put in a plug for both Black Lives Matter and learning about poverty. I think it's something that does give you, as the song says, both sides now. How do you look at something that isn't where you're at now? It changes you. It raises your consciousness about things and makes you understand other people better on why they make decisions that they make. So thank you.
Hi, this is Diane. This is very personal, but you know I always have to talk. Anyway, I was married at 18 to a man I did not love, but I wanted to play house. I wanted to get away from my mother. So we were together for 22 years, and then he divorced me for a much younger woman. And he had two more wives after that. Meanwhile, I met the love of my life, Wally, who died about 8 years ago. So I am now back dating my first husband, the father of my children. We are together with our family. He is impossible at times. We have completely different ideas about the political situation. But I'm learning patience and to express exactly how I feel about it. I think it's better if we just don't talk about this. So anyway, just patience, I think, is so important.
Thank you.
Story that, this is Esther, the story that Christy Bowden read reminded me of many aspects of that, reminded me of my daughter and Polly. And I'm just not going to get into every detail, but she never got into drugs, but she does like her alcohol at times. And if she stays away from that and stays on her medication, she has depression. But I did not realize that, and I don't think Jerry knew it. We didn't realize that there were some things that went on in her teen years that we didn't recognize as what was developing. But I used to say a number of times to my husband, and especially to Jerry, we are a couple of squares, and she is anything but. And that's all I'm going to say. But we do love her. We have to watch out for her all the time. We're never letting her without a phone call. At least once a week we call her to see how she's doing. Okay.
Everybody, Scott here. Christy, I totally get where you're coming from, except with my brothers. You know, I'm the oldest. Of course, I know everything, right? With one of them, I had to get over the fact that he wasn't living his life as I felt he should, because every time I tried to tell him he wasn't, I wouldn't hear from him for a long time. And I'm like, okay, this is not working. So I you know, gave it a lot of thought. And I had to realize he's a grown-up. He's going to live his life the way he's going to live it, and I just have to accept that. And once I truly did, and I think he responded to that, he felt that was pretty genuine for me, it's gotten better. I mean, it's a better relationship from of his brothers. And my other brother, kind of with Chris, with the mother with the alcoholic daughter, I had to draw some lines. I said, I'm not going to go there with you. I love you, but I'm just not going to go there with you. So that was really helpful, too. So, you know, it's hard. It's painful. It takes a long time.
Thank you. We will have time in the social hall to continue to talk. We'll finish our service now.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn for this week, number 1012 in the teal hymnal, When I Am Frightened.
As you go out into the world once again and find yourselves surrounded by Hallmark, Cupids, and chocolates, and all the different ways we have to offer and express our love, take just these words from U2's song once again. We're one, but we're not the same. We get to carry each other. Go out, carry each other. Amen.